Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the New Statesman podcast that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich.
So this week we're bringing you a live episode, which was recorded on the 11th of March at the South Bank Centre in London. Anna and I were there to run a discussion about brand feminism, about the questions that arise when celebrities and companies try and use images and ideals from feminism to market their products. We were asking, can that be a force for good in terms of raising awareness, or is that an unacceptable intersection of activism and capitalism? We were there as part of the Women of the World Festival, and in trying to untangle this, we were joined by Xing Sheng, the UK editor of Broadly, Simran Hans, film critic for The Observer, Jasmine Kapotcha, a culture writer for The Debrief, and Emma Gannon, a culture writer and the podcaster behind Control-Alt-Delete. Just a note about the recording. Obviously, it was done live. Everyone piled in on every point, so we didn't always use each other's names, but hopefully you can tell who was speaking. And then afterwards, there was a really interesting Q&A. Pretty much everybody used the microphone, so you should be able to hear what they're saying, but apologies in advance if it's not always clear. Right, I think we'll start. Hello, everybody, and thank you very much for coming to the discussion of brand feminism. My name's Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. Together we do a podcast called Seriously, which we do in association with The New Statesman. We talk about books, movies, TV shows, and that also means we spend quite a lot of time talking about feminism in the media. That comes into our discussions fairly frequently.
So as you can see, today we're joined by four excellent guests to try and dig into what we mean when we say brand feminism, which we're defining roughly as when celebrities, products, companies, or even TV shows and movies make feminism a part of the brand projecting and use it to sell things to people, or more accurately, to women.
So we're joined by Jasmine Kapotcha, who's a writer for The Debrief, culture writer. We're joined by Xing Sheng, who is the UK editor of Broadly. We're joined by Simran Hans, who's a film critic for The Observer. And we're joined by Emma Gannon, who runs the podcast Control-Alt-Delete. She's got a book called Control-Alt-Delete as well. So it's a great panel. We've all got quite a lot of thoughts on this issue. I think it's something we've all thought about quite a lot. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought we'd kick off with the kind of initial dividing line of what we're talking about. So when we talk about brand feminism, do we consider it to be a force for good because it encourages more women to get interested in feminism? It might put people in touch with that idea for the first time because they haven't encountered it by another channel. Or is it a bad thing because it co-opts what's meant to be a radical political movement to sell people things and perhaps prevents them from getting something which truly is a kind of activism that perpetuates feminist aims? So let's throw that open question. Anyone want to kick us off?
I can start. I mean, for me, I think any awareness of feminism is a good thing. I think it's still wildly misunderstood, the actual word itself. So I think any chance to clear that up is brilliant. I think for me, it's reached a real tipping point. I mean, I receive about 50 press releases a day, and every single one wants to impact me with anything from a spa trip to some new socks. Everything is an excuse to be empowered, and that word is been lost on me. The one thing I will say, just one really quick example, is I think when the Women's March happened, I know it was perfect, and it wasn't as diverse when I went along as I thought it might be, but it was being Instagrammed, and that hashtag was being used millions of times all over the world. So when it comes to kind of an Instagrammable opportunity of empowerment, that was a good way, I thought.
I think it kind of depends on, you know, like if you want to be really aware of the way that a movement loses power, you need to start looking at the way brands buy into it. So I think, like, you know, with the press releases about how socks can empower you and how nail polish can empower you and stuff you consume and buy can somehow empower you, I think we've got to be really kind of careful and skeptical when people present us with these arguments. Because, I mean, let's face it, for most of our lives, we've been told by our family, by our teachers, don't let the things you buy down you. Don't buy into, like, consumerism. You know, the things you should value aren't things you can just buy off a shelf. You know, sometimes feminism can be in danger of being co-opted by that kind of consumerism.
I think it's difficult also because it's something that everyone wants to buy into for the always the right reasons. So it's really easy to pop down to Topshop and buy a t-shirt that says feminist on it, but you don't actually have to know what that means or what you're actually portraying when you're wearing that t-shirt. And because it's become this, like, Instagrammable, hashtagable thing, I think we've really diluted the meaning of what it is to be a feminist and what it should be to proudly wear a t-shirt that says feminism. And I think through brands kind of co-opting that kind of look, this is how you can be really woke and with it, the message has been quite dramatically.
I think as well it kind of comes down to this distinction in how you understand feminism itself. And as far as I'm concerned, feminism is a sort of socialist practice. All the things that are good about feminism are community and sort of equality of outcome, as much as equality of opportunity. And I think this kind of pernicious neoliberal Thatcherite idea of feminism as every individual woman's right to empowerment, you know, framed around these individual choices, isn't something that I feel comfortable buying into. So I find the sort of branding of feminism, yeah, kind of uncomfortable.
One thing I'm interested in is how everyone on the panel first kind of got to grips with feminism and first discovered that they might be a feminist. Is that something that, you know, how did you find out about it? Was it through, like, a feminist text or a teacher? Or for me, I think it was maybe through seeing peers that I thought were cool being feminist. And that made me think, oh, hang on, this might not be dry. It might be exciting and it might be cool. And that did help me get into feminism. I wonder how everyone here kind of got involved.
I think really the internet did it for me. Like, the internet radicalized me. Mm. I mean, like, it was websites like, and, you know, websites like Jezebel weren't perfect and blogs like Tiger Beatdown weren't perfect by any means, but they were the ones who were really writing in a way that was, like, really succinct and, like, snappy and engaging. You know, you didn't have to go and, like, read a book, although obviously now I do. You could, like, read this blog and find out more about, you know, what feminism was about. So I think for me, like, the internet was what really kind of brought it all straight into my bedroom with me, like, scrolling through, like, Tumblr, looking at it on my phone, like, reading it off a computer. Like, that was what made me.
It took me a really long time to engage with it. I remember doing it at university and, like, anyone else, like, whoa, this is very dramatic. Like, everyone piped down, feminism, oh my gosh. And then it wasn't until I left uni and then started working in women's lifestyle and then kind of understanding that, oh, this is what feminism means, and oh, I actually agree with some of these ideals. And it took me a really long time to kind of break that kind of dramatic, this is these insanely, you know, powerful women in literature who I didn't feel like I related to. And I was like, that feels really recent. And then, you know, coming into work and getting a bit older and reading a bit more, I was kind of like, oh, okay, so this isn't just something that has to be reserved for a certain set of women. Mm-hmm. But it took me a very long time to kind of bridge that gap.
I think I went on, like, a group holiday I think I was around 20, it's like 8 years ago, and I read How to Be a Woman by Catlin Moran, and I remember turning on everyone on the holiday because I was like, I think I'm a massive feminist, I don't think any of you guys are. And I just remember reading it and being like, you know, just really kind of, once you wake up you can't go back to sleep on just not tiny things, but just modern things where you think, why am I being told to spend like £50 on a bra, and just like all these things. So yeah, I think I describe her as the gateway. I think then it opened everything up. That was it for me, I think.
I mean, my mum, shout out to her on Mother's Day. Yeah, she always sort of talked about feminist issues but didn't necessarily frame them as feminist, and yeah, I feel like I didn't really have that language until I got to university and started to really understand the history of it. But I read the internet, I read Rookie magazine and all those kind of similar things. And yeah, I think Zing put it nicely by saying that she was radicalized by the internet, because I feel very similarly.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I had an English teacher at school who, because English was the subject I wanted to study, I used to like stay behind after class, and she used to give me extras to read. And she just started like slipping feminist books in there. That's how I first like read Germaine Greer. I read a lot of like second wave stuff when I was like 16, because that's what she remembered and what she gave me. But then I went to university, sort of discovered the internet, and was like, oh, this is what it means now, and this is. It kind of updated and, as you say, radicalised me. I think it was interesting what Jasmine was saying there about the idea of not feeling like it was for you and not getting that perception. Because something that we also wanted to come onto is this idea is feminism cool? And should it be cool? Should that be part of the conversation at all? And association, if that's such a thing, something that companies and brands and celebrities sort of can, that's how they can sort of get their brand in between that. Seeing what do you reckon?
So I used to work in fashion magazines, so I worked at Dazed and Confused and Wonderland, and I think it's a death toll for anything to be considered cool, because cool by extension means that there's going to be a day one day you will be uncool and something else will come and take its place. So I think that we kind of have to move away from this idea that feminism or like social movements or, you know, like left-wing politics, something has to be cool in order to be accepted. It should just be accepted because, right?
But maybe it's sort of like the opposite problem, not that feminism is something that's cool, but being unwoke or sort of being not radical enough is uncool. I kind of see it more the other way around. Like, it's kind of passing if you're not sufficiently engaged in the culture. I don't know if anyone agrees with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it can be quite overwhelming because things take different priorities. I feel like something will go kind of crazy on the internet and then the next day no one cares, so you're like, I'll just lose the effort joining in on that one. But I think I think you just have to really go to what you believe, because I think you can get slightly distracted, I would say.
I think the trouble is that it's really easy to perform for now, and like I said, with the t-shirt and put the hashtags on, it's like, yeah, check that box, because it is kind of, especially on the internet, it's so easy to feel included. So that kind of makes it trendy. And, you know, you've got all these figures in, you know, media who are throwing the word feminism around as if it is a trend, and because it's happening so dramatically now and so frequently, it feels like it's a movement in its own right that's quite, you know, solidified in this like moment that we're going through at the moment, whereas actually it's been going for a really, really long time. And it, when it wasn't cool, it wasn't as easy to perform it because you didn't know how to talk about it.
I think magazines have a responsibility not to call it trendy or cool. I read a magazine a while ago, I won't name it, but in the editor's letter it said, feminism is so hot right now. And I kind of thought, a flare is hot right now, like a sandal is hot now. Like feminism isn't going to go away. Well, I hope it does go away, because then we won't have to talk about it and we will have achieved it. But yeah, it's not like a hot thing.
Yeah, the idea that people want equality for anything is not like a trendy concept. That is a very good distillation of that that idea, yeah.
Does anyone on the panel think that there are merits to like the accessibility of feminism being so much more popular, and if you want to call it, you know, trendy or whatever, are there merits to that? You know, like what you were saying about a gateway drug, something that's a good thing?
Yeah, the new Glamour magazine's on the shelves now, and Zoella has called herself a feminist in the magazine. She has 7 million, you know, young people following her. So I don't know if she would have called herself a feminist a few years ago, because I don't think it was like safe enough to kind of openly just say I'm a feminist. Even Emma Watson, it was like, feminist, Harry Potter. And I think it's kind of merging it and making it so incredibly mainstream. So I think that's a positive. Personally.
But I mean, with the, just to be controversial, with the Emma Watson thing, her entire movement is called He for She, which is decentering women in a sort of feminist movement. So I don't know if celebrities sort of associating themselves with feminism is necessarily, bringing it to a wider audience is necessarily inherently a good thing.
But it's a really, really problematic thing if you don't. So like everyone was so angry at Taylor Swift and Kim Kardashian took a really long time to be like, woohoo, feminism, until she brought emojis this week for International Women's Day. It's a huge problem if you don't. And if you do, you need to do it well, slash maybe better than Emma Watson did.
I think accessibility is necessarily a bad thing, but then it's like, are these people's voices, you know, the accessible people who like aren't actually going to say anything that really challenging about, you know, important issues like the gender pay gap or whatever, like are these people just going to drown out every single voice in a conversation? Like, are we only ever going to be stuck talking about Emma Watson and Taylor Swift and Kim Kardashian ad infinitum until the end of time before we even get to discussing some actual like proper issues, you know? So I think that we have to be really careful about like prior, like who's getting the priority here, like speaking the loudest, who are we paying the most attention to? Because a lot of the times, like the meat and bones of feminism is stuff that is like very unglamorous and unsexy. It's stuff like, are you getting paid the same? Like, are you working the same hours? You know, do you get to have the same amount of like childcare as like a man would, you know? So it's like that kind of thing where it's like, I don't want feminism to be completely taken up by the most accessible voices, because feminism should always be challenging, because it has to be challenging. It's challenging something, otherwise it wouldn't be there.
I think the word that Emma used, gateway, is a really good one, because you want these things as a gateway to something else. So as long as that path leads away from the gate into other things, into, as we've all described, you know, further reading, more perhaps harder to find advocates and activists to, but perhaps that path doesn't always exist. But given that, we wanted to ask everyone whether there were any sort of brand feminism brands or corporations that you will admit liking. A couple that came up when Anna and I were brainstorming about this was Glossier, is a really interesting example, the skincare and makeup brand, if you're not familiar with, that really does centre a particular idea of womanhood, and maybe they hint feminism.
Yeah,
as well.
they're not really openly being like, no, this is feminist makeup. They're just kind of, I think, feminist adjacent in some way. And yeah, I mean, me and Simran actually went to the Glossier pop-up.
Why are you bringing this up, Anna?
Didn't we? Can't, you know, none of us are free from sin. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if there are any that, yeah, that people do like, as Caroline says.
For me, it's when I dig deeper and I realise they're kind of putting their money where their mouth is. I was asked to participate in a brand partnership a while ago, and they were cool t-shirts, fine. Looked into it and I was like, are any of the proceeds from this, because you're co-opting the Women's March, it was all about empowerment. And I was just like, you're not donating anyone. No one is benefiting this. And that's really important to me. I mean, things like hashtag like a girl, I don't think that was perfect, but they did give a lot of money and they did actually set up actionable sort of results from it. And with Dove, they're not perfect. Do work with the YMCA charities to go into schools to talk to people, try and make people feel better. So as long as they're putting money somewhere and they're making action, I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah, I think there was one recently. There's a Los Angeles-based clothing brand called Refamin. And I think someone tweeted at them recently with the whole gun control debate going on in the US saying, DHL isn't going to cancel its partnership with the NRA. What are you going to do about it? Because I've noticed all your packages are shipped by DHL. And then they immediately responded and said, we're looking to it and we would not continue this partnership if we think that, you know. So I think that's really good. You know, that's kind of how you put your money where your mouth is, where you're like willing to be called out. But then, you know, if someone says you're doing something wrong here, please change it, and you clear it and you like put your money where your mouth is and maybe cut off a lucrative contract, I think that's a really good sign.
Totally.
Yeah, because I think none of us here don't want companies run by unfeminist people, you know. It's a general progressive aim is a very good thing. It's where it crosses the line into, like Emma was saying, you know, this profits us but we're using something that should profit others to do that. I think where you problems.
Yeah. Money is a big part of this, I think. Mm. You know, if I can afford a £80 t-shirt from Topshop that says I'm a feminist, like, am I more of a feminist than someone that can't afford that t-shirt? That really sits badly with me. And I think there's been lots of things recently in Vogue or whatever when they've done like a gallery of like t-shirts to buy, some of which are like over £100, how to dress like a feminist. I'm like, that is insane. So draw a line at that. Yeah.
Yeah. I You go ahead.
Oh, I was saying there's a really interesting debate going on with International Women's Day. So International Women's Day was originally founded as Women's Day by a bunch of socialist workers. And it was all about garment rights and, you know, women who were being forced to work in horrendous sweatshops and like dying in fires and things like that in New York. And, you know, now International Women's Day, it's like you see all these brands kind of putting out T-shirts and like International Women's Day edits and stuff. And you have to ask yourself how many of these brands are being made by women in sweatshops in other countries.
Not the original purpose of the day, is it?
Yeah, and it's not the original purpose of the day. And in fact, you know, maybe we should start thinking about it more as international working as it is about, you know, stuff like that, like workers' rights.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And that intersection, I think, between feminism and capitalism, I think, is really what lies at the heart of all of this, isn't it? That this idea that if a T-shirt costs £100, what's stopping you buying a normal T-shirt for £20 and donating £80 to a cause that you think advancing your aims? You know, that's not something I often see magazines telling me to do.
I have a quote that I wanted to bring out about feminist T-shirts, which is something we've kind of touched on quite a lot. So Arabil Sakardi in The Hairpin writes, "Clothing marketed as feminist apparel is a joke. It's all a joke. It's a beautiful, elaborate joke, one tied to capitalism and production and visibility and effects. It's not just a T-shirt. It never was. And fashion was never just about how good you feel in your clothes. This is the way of the commodity fetish, the inside joke of fashion and marks." So I wondered, how do people feel more generally about feminist T-shirts? What Zing was saying is amazing there. Does anyone own any? I mean, we're all wearing our wow pins right now. but does anyone own feminist T-shirts? How do we feel about them as a concept?
Does anyone in the audience own a feminist T-shirt? I was interested to see.
Numbers. A few people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to.
I'm sure we can get you one somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Sale downstairs.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's the point. If it's made ethically, I'll buy one.
Is that
think that's the thing, because I feel weird pressure to buy them, and I don't think I own any. Don't check my wardrobe. But I feel this weird pressure to be part of it and perform it, because I know I'm a feminist, but I feel like I have to prove it to everyone. And even on International Women's Day on Instagram, obviously it's like scrolls of like, look at me and my mom, and you know, women, woo. But I was like, oh, I don't really know what to post, but if I don't post something, does that mean I'm not a feminist? And oh my gosh, I haven't Snapchatted a picture of me in my like, I love women T-shirt, so that obviously means that I'm a really bad feminist. But like, I have weird pressure to perform it, to prove to everyone that like, this is my view. I don't know if anyone else feels
that. I feel the opposite.
Really?
I put an Instagram post up of me at the Women's March and I had a sign, and I felt really icky that I Instagrammed it.
Really?
Yeah. I felt like I should have been on the march, not really told anyone.
Mm.
Don't know.
I was at an International Women's Day event last week, and they were giving out Time's Up T-shirts. And for anyone who isn't familiar, that's the Harvey Weinstein, Me Too kind of film industry stuff to do with feminism at the moment. And I didn't take one because I just felt weird about it. Why do I need a T-shirt that says Time's Up to kind of show that I broad support the movement? No. Mm. There was something, performative about it that I didn't want to check into.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you didn't Instagram yourself going on the Women's March, were you even there kind of thing?
Yeah.
And I think that's like the real issue. It's like, why do we feel compelled to like perform all these things in public just so we can prove our credentials or like assert the fact that we're down for the cause? Or, you know, I think there's a real element of like performativity here. And this doesn't extend to them, of course. It extends to literally everything, like performing a good night out because you're Snapchatting it all the time. So I kind of think that, you know, this is a problem that pretty much everyone in the 21st century has to deal with. Like, why do we feel the need to have to perform our politics and our Fridays and our relationships on every single social media platform going?
I think what we're saying here is actually a real mark of how far feminism has come in terms of awareness, though, because I remember my mum telling me stories about when she went to university in the 60s, she'd have, I don't know if it was a t-shirt or a jumper, but she did have something that said like feminist on it, and she wore it on campus in the first week, and she made several friends who felt the same about politics as her and so on. And it kind of innate, a bit like, you know, if you go to a convention fan wearing your particular thing, you're wearing the thing. It performed that function because so many people were not willing to be open about that. Whereas I feel like we're now more in a position where you sort of, if you are not a feminist, you need to justify why. Otherwise, I'm assume that you are. That's, we've moved to a different default, perhaps. Mm.
Yeah. And I think the signifiers change. Like, the word feminism doesn't mean the same thing as it might have meant in the 70s. I think the definition is sort of more broad now, more malleable. And maybe if you saw another girl or guy or whoever wearing a sort of I'm a feminist t-shirt, whatever, I think you wouldn't necessarily assume that that person's the same praxis as you.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think that's true. So we talked a bit about already about the kind of the pitfalls of what happens when, for want of a better word, feminism becomes trendy or viral. Are there any others panel have encountered that we should all be looking out for as critical observers?
Things that have gone wrong.
Yeah.
There's one example a while ago, which was actually a really lovely idea, and then it kind of got ruined, brands taking over. It was when you... were encouraged to wear a safety pin on the tube to show that it was you were kind of like a safe person and you kind of had someone's back in terms of kind of refugees and people knowing that you're a safe to talk to. And again, it was one of those things where a diamond encrusted safety pin was then being sold in the fashion magazines off the back of this movement. And I just, that, it's just, there's so many of these examples, but I think it's a shame because I think the movements itself, they can be great. So why can't we find other ways of celebrating them and championing them and writing about them in magazines without having to sell something?
Mm.
I don't know if that's ever going to end.
Mm, yeah. I definitely think a personal pet hate of mine is certainly the jeweled or designer version of the original thing. Like, you see that all the time. That's definitely it. Simran, did you want to come in on that?
Well, not so much on that, but I guess a related point is, as this sort of conversation extends to cultural criticism, I think, you know, labeling certain celebrities as feminist or, you know, trying to decide that their brand is feminist can actually sort of detract from the work. I think someone like Lena Dunham is a very cliched but good example of how this can kind of go wrong, because as a figurehead, she has messed up a lot of times. She's done things that, you know, are very annoying. But as an artist and as a filmmaker and, you know, as someone who's a TV showrunner, I think a lot of the work that she's created is brilliant. But if the barometer for whether it's good is whether it's feminist, I don't know how productive that is. And I don't know how sort of helpful that is in actually talking about feminist concerns.
I think that's definitely true. That's something Lena Dunham is something Anna and I've talked about on this podcast a lot before, because we both feel that her work does stand on its own a lot of the time, but that it's impossible to really discuss it. I've even had this when going to like launches for new series of Girls is coming out, and the distributor put on a screening and you go along, and for like 2 hours you just have the most blissful time because you just sit in the dark and you watch the show, and then you come out and you have to talk about it with people, and the first thing they want to talk about is, you know, did Lena Dunham do something bad with her dog on Instagram or something. But I really enjoyed the TV show.
Yeah, I think more generally celebrity icons is something that I'm quite interested to talk about, because we talked a lot about how brands try and sell you feminism. What happens when celebrities or musicians or artists include feminism in their sort of personal brands and in their work? Is it a good thing to have these icons to look up to? Like, I'm sure everyone on the panel will have examples of people that they really like, they also think have a really good feminist praxis. But also, is it always kind of doomed to fail? Is every human person doomed to be problematic? And does that mean if we
problematic fave.
Yeah, but kind of if we eyes people as feminist icons, does that just mean that you know, again, we're putting the emphasis on the individual in that kind of, as Simran said, neoliberal way?
I don't know if I have idols anymore. I feel like growing up you'd like have Spice Girls on the wall and be like my idols. Now actually I kind of idolize, well, even, I don't know if that's the right word, but I kind of look up to, ironically, like teens now, because they are feminists, and they've grown up being feminists. I interviewed Rowan Blanchard recently, who's 14, 15. She's such a feminist. I didn't even know what feminism was at 14. And I think that I'm actually looking at the much younger generation now to actually, like, for guidance. I'm like, what are you guys thinking? Because I actually think I'd be more aligned with what you're stirring up rather than some traditional icons that I should...
Yeah, I just did a panel with like some of the teenage ambassadors for the festival. It was called like Badass Girls from History, and I did like a panel interview with some of them. And these were girls who were like 16 to 18, you know, they literally just finished fresh from their GCSEs, and they were saying stuff like, oh yeah, you know, so I read like Betty Friedan's like The Feminine Mystique, and you know, I really like Simone de Beauvoir and what she's saying. And I was like, oh my God, like when I was your age, I literally read Harry Potter repeatedly over and over again, which is, you know, which has feminist like angles, definitely, but it's not Simone de Beauvoir. So yeah, I do agree. I think that, you know, younger women, the ones that I've met, are just incredible. And I really hope that they don't come into this world and get jaded by how horrible all the grown-ups are, because I'm really relying on them.
Totally.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I don't know, I think even I find myself, even 5 years ago, I think I cared whether a celebrity I liked said in an interview whether they were a feminist or not. And I just don't care anymore. Like, it's not what they're for, and it's not why I enjoy what they make. It's actually been really liberating for me to just realise that I'd rather they didn't talk about it, to be honest. It's like it's your own private business what you choose to donate to and like campaign for. Please don't like dilute your work with it.
I think there's still an expectation though that like if you see a celeb on a chat show or something, that at some point in the conversation it's like, oh, let me just slip feminism in. Yeah. Oh, I'm with the team. And if someone doesn't, then it's kind of like a weird, I don't know, even though that's not something I personally in my understanding of feminism and how I want it to, you know, travel and grow, it still feels a bit odd if that's not part of the conversation. And I think, you know, it could be media's fault and how quick we are to like put feminism in a headline because it's trendy now. But I still have this weird expectation for celebrities to speak about it because it is so big and public at the moment.
And for me, I feel like I need more men to talk about it still, because that does matter to me. You know, if someone says, and not necessarily says, I'm a feminist. I mean, I remember when Bill Bailey wore that I'm a feminist t-shirt, and I just, that was good, I thought. It looked like he made it himself, so. you know, with Timothy Chalamet donated all the money from his wages from the Woody Allen film, I kind of felt like that was quite prominent. And actually, I do respect him more for doing that. Mm. I don't know whether anyone else does.
Yeah, I think I feel like he was presented with a series of bad ones, having like done a film with a director that he didn't want to endorse. And I think he picked the best bad option and did so publicly, hopefully in a way to sort of shame people who hadn't done that into thinking that maybe it was something you should do. Yeah, I felt the same about the story about Jessica Chastain helping Octavia Spencer negotiate equal pay for the film that they're working on. Like, absolutely she should have done that. I would like it to not be like global news that she did do it, but that's definitely a case of someone kind of literally putting their money where their mouth is, and that's a good thing, I think.
Yeah, it's another one of those questions about like things being performative, isn't it? And it's obviously so impossible to tell. And I think everyone has personal preferences where they're like, yeah, I actually like this. I liked that Beyonce performed in front of a 30-foot feminist sign, or I didn't like, you know, that Taylor Swift went for a whole girl power thing. I feel like it's so personal, and it's so to tell when things are actually performed feminism and when they're not. And also, I think part of the problem is, not to be an idiot, but like under capitalism, everything costs money. And if someone writes a, you know, a feminist book that retails, are we like, oh, this is co-opting feminism, selling it back to us? No, probably not. It's really difficult for me to know where to draw the line sometimes, I think, in my mind about what is problematic and what isn't. And I guess that's just inherent in our capitalist society that you can't always make those distinctions so clearly.
But I guess like problematic just means something has problems. It doesn't mean that it's a write-off or it doesn't have any redeeming qualities. It just means that it's not perfect. And so I think as long as we're prepared to kind of examine like where the problem is, or like what we mean when we say problematic, rather than just sort of deciding that something isn't perfect and so we're just going to sort of check out of it, I think it's all right.
Do you think that word's lost meaning? Problematic.
Of course. It's a total cliche, but
yeah.
It's a very problematic word.
Another word that we've touched on a bit that I'd quite like to talk about, because it is often, as Anna said, feminism adjacent, is the word empowerment. Emma mentioned lots of press releases that she gets that offer her feminism empowerment through products. Do we think that word has any sort of qualities we can rescue, or is it better left in the past and we'll find a different way of expressing that concept?
I literally don't even know what that word means anymore, because I've been so like inured to it from like press releases and like sanitary pads trying to empower women's periods. And like, it, and the worst one is when they put an F in front of empower and they think they're being really smart, like empower.
No,
empowerment. Yeah, no, I must be on a terrible press mailing list, because I get that all the time. And I think that, yeah, that word's kind of lost on meaning. It's kind of now become, it feels like to me, marketing jargon now, you know, like when people talk about, hey, content's really important. That to me, it kind of has the same connotations to me as empowerment, because it just feels like jargon, like marketing copy.
I noticed that on the cover of your book thing, The Independent has written, I want to call this empowering, but it doesn't do it justice. And I just thought that's so funny that proves, doesn't
it? Yeah, exactly.
You want to say it's empowering, but it feels like that's not a word anymore.
But empowered to do what? Mm. Like, what does it even mean?
Strip off and be covered in moisturiser. Yeah.
And it's another one where it's all about individuals again, where it's like, okay, I'm going to empower myself as a person, as one human being, rather than being like, we're going to empower a group of disenfranchised people and make sure that they have, you know, the equal opportunity or whatever as everyone else. And that, for me, this shift where it's all about being a feminist as an individual. And I read We Were Feminists once by Andisa, and she said something like, these days I'm less interested in who's calling themselves a feminist and what they're doing with feminism. And I don't know if people relate to that quote at all.
Yeah, I feel like feminism has to become more about the action and not the label. I just kind of think that if you are, you need to be doing feminism, you need to be doing something like an action, or like, you know, you can't just be, say, you can't just be claiming that label without any proof to show for it. Like, what, like, if you call yourself a feminist, like, what have you actually done?
I feel like the new one now is like, kind of activism is now being turned into things. I mean, you know, like the Kendall Jenner Pepsi ad, it's sort of like, whatever's trendy, let's try and do it. But I think now it's cool to call yourself an activist, whereas back in the day, I think that would be like a really scary word, you know, like chuck paint, red paint over someone's fur coat or something. And now it's just these like tiny, subtle ways that you can be an activist. And I think now being a feminist also means being an activist. You can't just be feminist, you have to be doing something, however small.
Yeah, I think that something related to that, that comes back to what you were saying about your feelings about Instagramming yourself at the Women's March, though, because I sometimes feel like that, you know, I feel being the absolute worst, terrible, bad taste to like Instagram myself donating things to a food bank. Look how great I am. You know, that would be absolutely dreadful. We can all agree on that. So is it the same if I, you know, go and volunteer at my local domestic violence shelter? Should I be like snapping myself to show people that I'm doing something, or is it enough that I know that I'm doing that?
Well, I Instagrammed myself recently at the Help Refugees pop-up, because the whole point was you go there and you take a picture and you Instagram and you know, the thing is like, if you have thousands of followers on Instagram, I think you've got a bit of a responsibility there to pass on something that other people might want to do themselves. So I think I'm really torn on it, because I think writing a book or writing a magazine is a way of getting your opinion out there. Why is it different from putting an Instagram post up with a caption?
I suppose the point is action, isn't it? If you're asking people to take an action, if I'm saying, come and join me next week at this time, I'll be here, that's one thing. But just say, hey, look at me, I did this, I suppose that's a slightly different...
I know, Jasmine, you said you were feeling the pressure sometimes to kind of perform that.
But I think it's also really easy to be called out, particularly, I mean, nowhere near as I have like 2 followers. So that's fine. And I Instagram myself at the Women's March or not, then I feel like if I do it wrong, I'll be called out for it. I remember when the, was it? Beyonce went back, huge Beyonce fan, her Instagram, no, not on her personal Instagram, it was like one of the Beehive accounts, and followed them all, they're great, and it was pictures of her helping, giving out relief and giving out food and blah blah blah, and I was like, oh, that's nice, you know. But like, I didn't feel weird about the fact that she'd proved, had this like physical thing to prove that she'd been doing something really good, because it wasn't her showing off to her followers, someone who'd, oh look, here's Beyonce doing something nice. Whereas I think there's kind of a different vibe if, you know, you're constantly like, look how good I'm doing, look how good I'm doing, look at me with the people. Mm. It just feels really superficial. I'm not saying that it always is, but I don't know if I'm just too mistrustful of Instagram.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So is that a good point to open this up to questions from the audience? We've got a couple of roving microphones. If you could wait until the microphone gets to you, because then we can actually use your voice in the podcast. Thank you very much. Do you want to start with someone on the front there?
Hello. I was just wondering, you've spoken a lot about the kind of fallibility of celebrities and brands, I suppose, piggybacking feminism. I'd be really interested to hear how you think celebrities or brands could do it well. What would that look like for you?
I feel like, absolutely. If you're clothing, like, let's say, for example, you're talking about a clothing brand and you want to say, I'm a feminist clothing brand, like, put up your factory sales, like, put up your supply chain, like, let people know that this is where you're sourcing your materials from. These are the people that who are making the clothes. In a really odd way, American Apparel started this first, but then completely torpedoed it by obviously having Dov Chani be the face of the brand. You know, but it's that kind of thing where it's like just openness and transparency, and where you're not actually saying something like, oh, judge me because I'm a feminist label, but you're actually putting it all out there and you're letting people know, okay, we're putting it all out there, judge us, tell us whether we match up to the ideals we've put ourselves to. Mm. Because I think that's the only way people can trust you nowadays, because there's so much kind of like skepticism and mistrust going around, especially flying around companies and big brands, that you can't think but just put yourself out there and let people make the judgment call for themselves.
I think that's right. I think in terms of individual celebrities, I've really just recently come back to money, because we invest a lot of, and often our money, into what celebrities do. We help make them rich. So for all that I have criticisms of Emma Watson, she gave £1 million to the UK Time's Up Legal Defence Fund. And I saw that and I thought, well, yeah, that is you doing something and being the power we've given you to do the right thing. So I have to say, I really do look at the list of donors now to these kind of things.
If you've got financial power, redistribute it. That's just a basic and amazing thing you can do. Mm.
I'm a big fan of Bumble, Whitney Wolf's kind of Tinder, but for girls. But she obviously is earning like millions off it, has this massive tech company, is employing brilliant tech engineers, mostly women. And also on International Women's Day, I think, or maybe it was another occasion, when people were swiping, you could swipe to sort of donate to Women for Women International charity. And it was almost like building tech yourself and getting money yourself. That is a feminist move, because the more we know about tech and the more we know about having lots of money, the more I feel it will be like an equal space. I just thought that was a great partnership, because it was using the tech in a way that was native to you, but also donating to charities as you go.
I'd say it'd be quite nice if brands who are going to use terms like feminism and empowerment define it, rather than just plastering it on t-shirts and on, you know, to make us buy it. Like, define feminism is, please, Dove, Topshop, whatever, tell me what that is and then buy into it.
Some very good points there. Another question. Woman over there on the side. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I have two questions related to brands. One, I'd like to know the panel opinion about the Unstereotype campaign.
Unstereotype campaign.
And the other one is, I have worked for a consumer goods company that does work with brands and social mission, etc. And what I felt difficult, now I'm working for a foundation, so I'm on the other side. What I felt very difficult is the idea of backing up social movements, etc. is always to use the movement to kind of help to sell the brand, not necessarily to have the brand to help raise awareness. So now I work in a foundation doing work around prevention of violence against women, and I've heard people saying, this is not sexy. Mm-hmm. So how we go about that? Because some of the issues that we're dealing, or most of the issues we're dealing, are not sexy, but brands could help raise awareness about that. So how we could do that?
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier, weren't you? It's a really tricky one. How do you make those issues seem more exciting, make people want to put their money there? And
yeah, one organisation, not a foundation as such, who are doing a really good job in bringing domestic violence and violence against women to the top of the agenda is Sisters Uncut. So is there a sister there? So they raise awareness of domestic violence and shelters closing in the UK, and they have done so many things. Like, they've taken over Holloway Prison, they've squatted like abandoned flats, they've invaded red carpet premieres, sort of to raise awareness of domestic violence against women. And I think they're a really good example of how, you know, the issue might be difficult and unwieldy to grasp, but there are very simple, effective ways activists can actually do to kind of batter everyone's agenda by doing like really big stunts that also still pay full respect and understand the complexity of the issue they're trying to raise awareness of.
Totally. Yeah, I think it's a really tough one because lots of causes that we're fighting for are by definition things that are quite depressing and quite, you know, they're not ever going to seem like fun and sexy. So it's really tough, but it's great to see people like Sisters Uncut doing that work really well.
I'd say, because that's a good point, obviously the fact that you would have an ambassador or someone to take the campaign out is obviously a traditional marketing technique that's always had to be a certain way. But I think that the role of someone with influence is totally changing now, and it's not just plastering a traditional celebrity on the posters, but it's looking for someone who, and I'm not talking about influencers, I'm talking about someone with real influence in like a small, very niche targeted community, and then that can kind of then go out from there. It's like being the person to represent your campaign now, I think, is so important.
Yeah, I've heard people say this with if you've got a campaign to change legislation or so on, if you choose rightly, you only need one MP to initially agree with you, because they will persuade the others that you need to vote for it. So if you find the right person in the right situation, they can change everything. You don't necessarily need 30,000 people to turn up to a rally. And another question. Let's go over there at the back, if we could.
Hi. Everybody. Hi.
Hi, Sophie.
Hi. Hello, everyone. I was just wondering, so I was thinking a bit about BrewDog's IPA, the pink IPA, that they actually really, really badly packaged by putting pink on the label, but saying they weren't going to adhere to stereotypes. But by the same token, they charge women 20% for it, and they, which I mean, isn't the best thing, but they also... 20% of the proceeds they get from all sales go towards women's charities, and it seems as if it's not been marketed very well. But I was just wondering, kind of in the fallout following, and especially social media calling out and things ending up trending and everything, do we end up coming down a lot harder on brands and maybe even people, maybe even politicians, who try to be feminist rather than the ones that don't even begin to think about it?
I think about this all the time. Like, I think several of us who just... in this hour have used the phrase, it's not perfect, but, and I want things to not be able to be perfect because I want people to be able to try and sort of stick their neck out and actually attempt things. And yeah, it doesn't always go well. That was a very good example of it not going well. But ultimately, they wanted to raise some awareness, donate some money to charity, and charge women something that men have to pay full price for. And those are all things I can get on board with. So yeah, I'd be interested in if anyone else has any thoughts about this idea of that you don't have to be perfect, but you should try.
Was that an ironic pink? No. Oh, I don't know then.
Well, I think it was one of those. At what point does the pink irony just become pink? You know?
I kind of feel like I have more sympathy when individuals and politicians mess up. But if it's a brand, I'm like, come on, guys. How many people does BrewDog employ? Probably hundreds of people. And it must have gone through how many stages of planning and meetings for everyone to be like, sick, this is a sick idea. Well done. Well done, John. Good job, Tom.
And you know it was like that.
Yeah. And it's like, well, then I have a little bit less sympathy because there could have been one person to be like, guys, just maybe let's rethink this.
Maybe there are other ways of achieving our aims. Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like, with individuals, I feel like feminism for me anyway, a lot of like being feminist for me is about listening and learning and trying things. And obviously none of us sat here can be like, yeah, we're the perfect feminists. We know everything that there is to know about like women and gender and power. Like we're learning all the time. So I do feel bad when people visibly fail. But then the problem is if people are really, really defensive and not open to learning from their mistakes, that's when I think things can become a bit problematic in terms of, sorry to use that word, that's when we get problems occurring. There's divides happen in a way that's a bit more entrenched. It means that the movement splits a bit more. I like it when people make mistakes and they're like, cool, I've maybe learned something or I've at least listened to what you had to say about it.
Also, there's so many examples of when other people have messed up and I've been so used to being that person. Mm. I'm like, thank God I've seen you do that. I'm not going to do that now. And I think sometimes, so I think sometimes big scale errors like that are actually quite good for other brands to kind of learn from. And it's like you've taken one from the team and they won't do it again.
We have really high expectations though, don't we? Because if you're going to do it, then you better do it right, right? Because feminism is huge and feminism is crucial. And I think we're not very good as a society at being very forgiving when, I mean, it didn't need to be pink, like that was ridiculous, but like we're not forgiving by nature. So, and I think particularly now where the state of feminism and performative feminism and social media feminism, everyone is a feminist, well, can pretend to be. And I think because we're also aware that it's quite easy to pretend, we expect more. And I think we're right to expect better. We should be a little bit more forgiving, but I think we're right to expect more because otherwise it won't get better.
Mm. And I think the thing with like BrewDog is ultimately the only reason they're doing this is to sell more beer, right?
And like, we all know that. The customer women.
Exactly. So I feel, again, I feel less sympathy with them as a brand because it's like, okay, you tried to sell us something. You wanted us to like part with our cash and give you it. And you got it wrong, so idiot. Like
now they've got a shout out on a podcast.
Sorry, I'll cut this bit out. another question. Ask that woman in the back row there.
It was just kind of in response to that, really. The thing is, there are some small businesses, women that are right, that are, you know, independent bookshops, which we don't have many left of, you know, and maybe we, if as feminists, we need to be shopping in those places, not Waterstones or Foyles, I've given them a shout out, but, you know, Houseman's in King's Cross or, you know, local women collectives that sell the badges or sell the t-shirts. You know, there's a difference between buying a t-shirt from them or buying a t-shirt from Topshop who don't pay their staff and don't pay tax in this country. And I think there's a link there as well. If you think about the literature available, like children's books, when my cousins were born 13, 14 years ago, I couldn't have bought them a book about feminism or feminist icons. Now I can, but I won't buy it from Waterstones. I mean, I have once in the past, but forgive. But I'll try and buy it in the radical independent bookshops that I know exist. So I think looking great to see all the stuff out there, but I think we have the consumer power, and it goes back to that feminism and socialism, you know, things are interconnected, and we've really got to remember that.
I think that's absolutely right. It comes with what I was trying to say before about money, and like if you have money, use it in concert with your aims and ideals, really. And I think we're all really okay with the fact that being a feminist means doing extra work, and so if it's harder to get to the independent bookshop, you should still do that. I think that's how I'd see that. Anyone else want to comment on that?
I think there is an onus, like there's a responsibility to I think it's easy to forget that you need to go searching for what feminism actually is. You need to go actually looking for these independent shops, which we should. And I'd like to think most of us in this room who have chosen to come to this panel would have that awareness. But a lot of people don't. And we want feminism and we want lazy feminism. And if that means going down to Topshop down the road to buy a T-shirt and it's easy to take a picture of it, then more people are going to do that. And I think it feels really inaccessible. Like, even when I was first learning about feminism, I was kind of like, well, this is very white and very separate and not something that I can assimilate to. But you kind of have to look at yourself and be like, yeah, okay, I'm going to look into this. I'm going to take that extra bus to go spend the money the right. And it is putting yourself in that position and actively choosing to do it properly.
I think we have time for a couple more questions. Should we take one from the back over there if we could? Thank you.
Just off the back of that comment around the feminist bookshops and also the hashtag feminism, and when then we're starting to question brands, you know, what is their feminist approach? Can one of you start a feminist index, please? So let's list the companies that do that, because we've had a lot of the names and the brands thrown around that we would perhaps... we should avoid. But if there's just one place, maybe I'm just a bit old school when I used to have the yellow pages, I don't know, and just to have like one website, one big list, if you want to make a difference in places you want to go, where should we be spending our money? You know, I think you ladies have got quite a lot of influence. You work in the media, you mentioned some fashion brands that I'd never heard of. And so somebody please make the index. That's
such
a question.
A good idea.
Is that a good thing?
Or does that not already exist? There's an app. What's the app called? Buy up.
It's used a little bit more American, as do I. It's used a little bit more American for some global companies as well. So it's a start, but it probably
There probably needs to be one in the UK as well. But it's called Buy Up, for those who didn't hear me say it earlier. Since I like, is that annoying? But I wanted to build on the point about money earlier. I think the other place that we can have an incredible impact is in the ballot box, because we are all equal when we step inside that voting booth. And so this is a shame, but the Women's Equality Party is standing 25 candidates in local elections in May in London. Find your local candidate, get involved, come see me after.
Thank you very much.
Do we have time for?
I think we have time.
I think someone over here has had their hand up
for
a while.
Yeah, let's go for it.
It's more of a comment, really, and following on for quite a few of the questions that have been raised. There's the big companies are being compelled to release their pay gap or their pay structure information. And we've already seen, I think it's Tesco, where the shop workers and the warehouse workers are not being paid the same despite their work being similar or same value. So I think it'd be very, very interesting to see when these companies, Dove, Bodyform, whoever else, who've been making lots of money off us by saying, hey, we're sympathising with your values, when they come to release this information, I think there might be some interesting things to cover about them.
That's so interesting. Any men in the audience, to tell every woman you know how much you earn. That's helpful for all of us.
That is an important piece of activism. We all think we know, but we'd like to be sure.
Yeah.
And have we got time for one more, maybe? Yeah, let's go at the back there if we can. There's Mike just coming to your left.
I would like to respond to the... I know there is an index called Global Transparency Index that is published every year for the fashion industry. And if you, for example, you go to the Fashion Revolution campaign website, you can find it, and there all the major fashion companies are listed, and you can see how they score for different criteria. So in the environmental point of view, for the gender pay gap, and there's many, many categories, and I think it's a great resource for the fashion industry. And all the major hundreds and hundreds of companies are listed in that one, and the 2017 is available. 2018 is not released yet.
That's very useful. Thank you very much for that. It reminds me actually of a great Tumblr that someone made once about what the Daily Mail's cancer and what it says cures cancer. And you could go on and just list it all alphabetically and find that actually a lot of things apparently do both. But yes, I think that previous question was right. I would really like something like that.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to finish there because we've run out of time. But thank you very much to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including on Apple Podcasts, where you could leave us a rating and a review if you fancy. It makes us happy and it also helps other people find the show.
If you'd like to come and see us in person, check out the events page of our website, seriouslypod.com/events. Details of our next pop culture quiz and anything else we're doing will appear there.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them. Follow us to keep up with what we're up to or to chat to other listeners about things you've enjoyed on the show.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show or hearing your thoughts on what we've already discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.